Welcome to Sparks and Recreation, your source for info on community events, meta-analysis, and everything Hero Realms. Part of the Realms Rising Network.
Heroes of the Realms, welcome back to hopefully what is your favorite semi-regular podcast on the card game we all love, Hero Realms. I always save the name of the podcast for last. It's Sparks and Rec. I should probably figure out how to say that first. But, you know, we're only on episode 51. I'll figure out someday. welcome back, everybody. It's good to be here. We have a wonderful podcast lined up for you. We've got two all-star cast with us today. One of whom is one of the few who can say carries the title, the Thunder from Down Under, although there's some other people who might fight him for it. We have Cooper Filcherphobe Fitzglenelt joining us today, which he has up in his Zencaster title name. So we'll just go with Fitzglenelt. That was a good one. Filcho, my friend, it's good to see you. How's life? How's life going for you?
Yeah, life is good. The fan, the pedestal fan right next to me is doing its job. Yeah, having a lot of fun with Hero Realms lately. I'm sure we'll get over that to our main focus. One of the new classes, or one of the buffed classes, is a lot of fun right now. And yeah, life's good. And looking forward to it.
Awesome. Great to have you here. Keeping things rolling along. You can't delay introducing greatness. And ladies and gentlemen, greatness is here today amongst us. He started things off. He turned his camera on, I'm pretty sure, already with his shirt off. He's topless right from the get-go. You know, and for the podcast listeners at home who can just kind of imagine it, I can tell you, it's a sight to behold, and I'm grateful for it. It keeps us on our toes. You know, it's hard to concentrate a little bit, but that's kind of the name of the game, I think. Alex, the cat's is meow. Rogers joins us today, my friend. Good to see you. Welcome back. How are you?
It's great
doing?
To be
how's
back.
How's life for you?
Life is good as always. I am also excited to talk some Hero Realms. I've been playing a lot more over the weekend. My wife was on like a little small retreat, and so I had 3 days, like 3.5 days to myself, and which meant that I got to play a lot of Hero Realms. So way more than I probably have in the last like 3 months combined. So it's good to be back.
Fantastic. Ready to be here. It's great timing to have you here with us on Sparks and Rec today. I'm a little envious because personally, I've had almost no time to play Hero Realms. I've had like two or possibly three games going, a monk game and a barbarian, and maybe one of the other two that's not finished yet. So I haven't been playing a ton, but I have been, you know, slowly trickling the games and playing some other stuff. But I'm really looking forward to hearing what you guys are going to talk about. By the way, hint, hint, one of the main things we will be focusing on is the Ranger. And we're going to be looking at a lot of data and hearing from two guys who I think have been playing a lot of Ranger and talk about some of the how the tides have turned for the old OG class, especially with the buffs and the ancestries that have affected it. Before we do that, though, I just want to I'll throw it over to Alex really quick, who can just give a quick shout out to the community and all the peeps that we love and who are hopefully listening this podcast right now. Alex.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, shout out to everybody who participates in the Realms Rising Discord, always keeping things lively, as well as all the patrons for Sparks and Recreations and for Hero Helper. The donors to all of these things are what keep this flowing, alongside of, you know, the wonderful efforts of our host here. Yeah, just thank you for everything that you do. Wouldn't be the same without you.
Well said, yeah. And thanks to all the people in the events, the people who run them, the people who play in them, the people who talk about them in the community. It's one of the best parts of the game, as we always say. So thanks to everybody there. Next, so I already gave a little hint about what we're going to be talking about. But Coop, maybe you can just give us like a little tasting just a little sprinkle of what you've got in store to talk about connected to the Ranger for this episode.
Well, let's just say that some birds are in fashion, and in particular, the elves are making them work. So Elf Ranger is looking real nice. I think Alex has been playing that as well. He's loving it too. And I'm having a lot of fun with Parrot and Compass, and it's looking at the stats as well. It's looking real good.
Nice. That's fun. And, you know, just for the people who might not be familiar, that Parrot, if it enters your discard pile, what does it do? Does it give you, does it jump back in the card and give you gold?
They changed it to draw a card. And with Elf Ranger, you can sometimes trigger that 4 times a turn.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you can use the elf's ancestry skill to discard and draw. And if you discard that, you're getting 2 draws actually from that, aren't you?
Yeah, there you are. Elf means that the parrot is always in discard pile, and then between Quiver, Tracking, and Compass, you're going to put it in the discard pile multiple times in the turn.
Yeah, the only time that it really ever gets dead, if you will, is if you go to flip your deck as like the very last draw, and then you draw it off the top and you just have nothing to pitch it with. I've seen that happen a very small handful of times, but that's like one out of every, I don't know, 40 games or something. So it's effectively never dead.
Yeah, it's a brutal card, and it gives you, if it's in play, it gives you 1 gold, right? So like if you end up
it's never in play.
Yeah, so if as an Elf Ranger, if it's ever in play, you're playing it wrong.
So you just end turn with it in hand.
Yep.
Rather than put it in.
Yep.
Because otherwise your opponent will just leave it in play, right? And you'll just get the gold from it every time.
I mean, you do get the 1 gold, which is nice, but it's nowhere near as nice as 3 to 4 extra jaws in a turn.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, all right. Well, that's it in a nutshell, guys. You've already heard some of the strategies and how to use it, but that Parrot is just crazy stuff. And I wonder if we should enjoy it now before the eventual the nerf to it happens. But who knows? We'll see. Well, and we'll talk about that when we look at the data and the matchups and how it's doing with it later. So that'll be fun. Before we jump into the normal flow of the go here, before we jump into what would you do, I want to just take a moment to talk about an interesting little tidbit, a couple crumbs of spoilers that Joel dropped in the Realms Rising Discord that seemed to denote the development of some sort of quest mode or some sort of mode that involves some sort of treasure chest icon that's kind of hovering over the draw deck and discard deck area of the first player, of the person who's playing, looking at the screen. He didn't say what it was. He said he can't talk about it now. But it looks like a little treasure chest with some sort of number icon on it, maybe. And who knows what that means. But maybe we can pontificate and speculate on it a little bit right now. Alex, I know you actually, you know, you responded to Joel a little bit in that Discord. What do you think this could be?
Yeah, so... You know, through the blurry mess, it looks like a little treasure chest with a number 4. So I automatically assumed that, you know, being that they want to put out the content that they've already produced in paper, which one of those things is the quest cards, that is a natural thing for them to be developing next. So that's why I asked, is it the quest line that they're trying to bring into the game? Which would make sense, because a lot of those quests require you to do something X number of times, and there was a number 4 there, so, you know.
Yeah, and just to give a little more background here, Joel wrote right before he dropped that they're playing more level 24 games internally, or they're testing them, with the new redacted system. So it's an actual system that they're actually building into the game, right? And it could be a quest system, right? That sounds like it's something that would totally fit. And he says, hopefully he can start talking about it soon. Okay. And then he dropped that picture later. Coop, you saw this too, I take it. What do you think this could be? I mean, do you have any ideas?
I haven't played with the quests in paper, so I don't really know how they work. I'm looking at the card gallery now. I'm not quite sure how a treasure 4 would fit into all of it, other than some of the quests say, you know, play 4 champions in a turn, or you know, play four actions a turn. Maybe that's what that is. It's the counter.
A counter down to unlocking that chest or something.
So I'm not really sure how quests are going to affect the pacing of the game, because I think that's their main concern. It probably adds a bit more of a dynamic element to the game itself. Looking at these rewards, I'm not really sure if they're particularly...
It gives you an alternative win condition other than just ending life.
I'm just not really sure if any of these rewards are particularly worth it.
Does it end the game if you get them all, or does it... No, it gives you a treasure in the paper. Yeah,
if you complete... By the looks of it, you get a treasure if you complete a quest. And the treasures are, like, they're decent cards. They're not amazing, you know. I'd rather have a firebomb in my deck. So if I need to jump through all these hoops to grab a card that's like maybe worth 4 or 5 gold if I were to buy it out of the market, do I just want to ignore it and go on? I don't know. I haven't played with quests. So I'm not really sure how they're going to affect pacing of the game, but they'll definitely add a little flavor and dynamic element to it. So
maybe it could be like, it might not even be a card, you know, maybe it's just like you get 4 gold that instantly happened that you get unlocked your next turn or something, or you get X amount of damage or X amount of draw, or you know, it could be a condition that happens. But if it's a card, like you said, that just goes into your discard pile, it's not as it doesn't seem like it might affect the game as much as some other ideas. But it'll be interesting to see. Now, you know, in Star Realms, they have missions, which are the... Alex was like talking about the ulterior win conditions, where if you complete X amount of objectives on your mission card, you can win that way. Like if you have 4 guards in play or something like that, or you know, something strange, or 4 guards with...
Frankly, I think that'd be more fun than just a random card added in.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Sorry. Yeah, so who knows what this will be? And it looked like there was a number over the treasure chest, whether that's a counter... Whether that's like a, who knows what that is, but it'll be interesting to see what this new system that they're developing is, and hopefully it'll be interesting enough that it kind of affects games rather than just gives you kind of a card that you may or not,
may or may not affect anything.
Depending on the class you're using, it could hurt you. You know, if it's a if it's a card that slows you down or something.
I'm looking at one of these quests. Have 3 or more champions in play at the same time. Imagine playing Necromancer and getting that one.
So just that's it.
Turn one.
It
is.
So it's a condition that you have to fulfill, and then what do you get if you do that?
I don't know what the reward for that one is.
They might would have to like reword that as like 3 non-token champions or something.
Yeah, or 3 non-starter.
Like, or 3, yeah, like 3 champions with a cost.
It'd be cool to see what happens. It'll add some
Kasha wrinkles. Example for making it easier as well, like Kasha and Bjorn.
The other thing, too, though, is that he said this is at level 24. So if they're testing this stuff at level 24, it might be a while before it's like actually implemented, right? Hopefully they'll do some.
Well, I mean, maybe not. I mean, if he's dropping a hint now, maybe it's something that's the next thing they're going to release in beta. I mean, frankly, beta's been not really beta recently. It's been more of like an exclusive, you know, pay to play something different club for recently because we haven't gotten anything new. So
beta's where people go to play Alchemist and against Alchemist right now.
Kind of, yeah. That's where I play my monk games, isn't it?
Listen, my Alchemist is 1 or 2 stars away from Diamond, and I cannot get a single game in queue because no one, it won't queue me against anybody. So,
yikes. Yeah. It's kind of a slow spot for beta right now, it seems like. But yeah. I understand because I'm only playing like 2 games at a time, so I can't say too much about it. All right, I think that's pretty good. It'll be interesting to see what happens, and if we hear anything new, of course, we will discuss it in future episodes. But that'll be one fun thing to keep an eye on as we move forward here. Okay, guys, with that, let's jump in to everybody's favorite decision point making strategy segment called "What Would You Do?"
would you say you do here?
All right. Today's What Would You Do has been submitted by As Awesome As, also known as Alex. So I'm going to use the word Alex just to make everyone confused for the next 5 minutes. So what would you do is, well, you can submit them through the Discord. Just message one of the hosts of Sparks and Rec, and we'll put it all together. The what would you do is always available to see in the Realms Rising Discord, and they're also on the show notes of the Sparks and Rec podcast, so make sure you have a look if you find it hard to follow along. Anyway, today's what would you do? We are playing an Alchemist Mirror. At level 14, it is turn 6. All skills and all abilities have been popped. And even though it's turn 6, we're already in the mid game. This game's probably not going to go too much longer. So currently we have 5 gold in play, and we have the ability to sacrifice our treasure hunt to get up to 8. The row is Arcus Imperial Dragon, Gruk Comma Storm Giant, Elven Curse, Krethos Master Vampire, and Roland the Sun's Wrath, I believe it is, or is it Blade? I can't tell, the image is a bit low quality. Anyway, so we have potentially 8 gold in play and a giant marker that we're staring at. Our discard, we have a Death Threat and Erasmus the Smuggler. Our enemy, which is Kakar, his discard contains a Spark, an Inquisitor's Touch, and looks like there's a fool's gold in there that's bouncing around. In Kakar's deck, which is, he has a Life Drain, a Recruit, and a Treasure Seeker. So next turn, and he's got 2 Philosopher's Stone and a Ruby floating around, so next turn Kakar will probably be able to purchase any one of these cards in the market. That's important to know. Yeah, that is the what would you do. We've got a giant stacked row and the ability to buy anything we want or hold on to that treasure hunt for later and grab that Elven Curse. So what would we do here?
What would we do? All right, you did a great job describing that, buddy. You really do. I did it last episode and I really sucked at it, so it's good to have you back doing it. You set it up so well. Why don't you take the first crack at it here, Philtro? What would you do in this scenario?
I looked at this row and immediately thought to myself, I have no idea what I'd actually do. In reality, I don't necessarily think that there is a correct decision here. That I'd say there are wrong decisions, but I don't think there's a correct decision. And my gut, the first thing my brain said to me was buy Arcus. We have Sack. And so Kakar has a lot of damage. We want that healing. And then my brain also said, buy Gruk, because we want to be able to do that extra cycle. So I'm bouncing between Arcus and Gruk. I also recognize that Roland's a good purchase, but I think Roland's only good if you already have one of the others. Mm-hmm. So if we buy Roland and Kakar buys the other 2, Roland's not that good. So we probably want to go for Arcus or Gruk. And I think I finally settled on Gruk because when you're playing Alchemist, getting that extra draw is very nice. Just because you have Spectrum Spectacles, you get that extra green. While we don't have healing lying around, there's probably pretty good odds that we get an Arcus or a Roland, and that gets us enough Imperial to last through. But yeah, Kakar's deck is a lot more damage heavy than ours. So even though we have a bit of an early lead in damage, we're at 61, Kakar's at 40. If we let this game go late, Kakar will probably start winning. I think Gruk is the... I think Gruk's the way to go just because of that extra cycle. We've got a Rot in play as well, so Gruk will help us play that Rot more frequently to really get nice and slimmed down. And yeah, so quick burning question. The treasure hunt. Yeah.
Quick question for your Philtro. All right, so you get Gruk, all right? And let's just say something crappy shows up on the road. It doesn't really affect anything. What does Kakar do on his turn? Or what would you do if you were Kakar? You basically have the choice of everything.
Yeah, Kakar is pretty much always going to have the gold to buy everything next turn. Is there a world? 5. Sorry, I'm just doing some math here. 5, 7.
It's highly unlikely if it's impossible
Kakar can flip into 9 gold next turn. Kakar can flip into 10 gold next turn. And can have 9. So
Kakar, like, it's probably pretty much guaranteed he's going to have 9. Like, he's going to be able to buy anything on the board he wants.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at the board to see if he gets an 8 cost and the Elven Curse.
No.
It's possible, but unlikely.
Is it possible?
Yes. He's got 2 draws. He's got potentially 2 draws next turn. So if he flips into the Inquisitor's Touch or a Fire Gem off the top of the deck, then he gets there. Yeah. So that's what I'm looking at. If I'm in Kakar's spot, I'm probably buying the Arcus.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
So if Azor Ahai buys Grak, Kakar is probably buying Arcus. There is an argument by Roland in that position, but I'm probably going Arcus.
Yeah,
and then hope I win the race to Roland.
Yeah, that's because now he's got Recruit and Arcus, and he's got the Life Drain.
See, funny. Down on I'll keep my thoughts to myself until.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I was just kind of dissecting and thinking, like, if we're thinking about the opponent's turn and then what's going to happen after that.
Yeah.
Just experiment. All right. Cool. All right, Alex, let's go to you then.
Yeah. Ready so, to go.
What would you do here?
Your line of thinking, exactly my line of thinking. My first thought is always heal and draw is amazing in Alchemist, just because especially when you already have a sacrifice to sustain yourself into that power draw where you can cycle everything in one turn. But because as awesome as or Alex is already at 61 HP and Kaka is at 40, like, he's already kind of got his boot on his throat at this point in time. If you can get him consistently below that 30th threshold and turn off spectacles, it really severely hurts the Alchemist. And so that's where I thought, okay, I think that gives the leg up on Grak over Arcus, just because if you go ahead and get it, you're going to probably see Grak next turn. And then you're going to be able to cycle 3 cards because of Grak. And then you'll most likely be able to get Elven Curse the next turn, barring weird circumstances. So you're going to have Grak and a guaranteed Elven Curse next turn, which will put a ton of damage into your deck. And unless he does manage to get Arcus and Roland and manage to draw both of them in the next turn, then the game's probably over in like 5-6 turns at this point in time.
Okay. Yeah, great explanation. I'm just going to jump in and say I would probably, initially I was thinking Arcus, mainly just to keep him. And the reason I asked Filtro what he thinks Kaka would buy in his turn is because if he gets Arcus and things line up for him and he scraps and then he starts comboing the healing and, Recruit pops up and he's all of a sudden he's back in the game. That's tough too. I know, but the way you just explained with Grak and just putting all that damage on, that's a really good argument. I went a little more defensive, and you probably shouldn't be at this point when you're, like you said, you got your foot on this deck. So I like that explanation. But
I think if the health discrepancy wasn't 21 and he wasn't already 10 away from that 30 threshold for spectacles, then I think Arcus is the right buy. If we're anywhere close to the same HP, or if CCA or Kaka is closer to max HP.
Yeah.
The fact that it's at 40, that's what switches Grak and Arcus in my mind. Yeah.
Now, granted, you're going to take some hits next turn. When that Life Drain the Treasure Hunter deal their damage, you're going to take some shots.
We're going to take, at least 11?
Right. So it's going to be closer than
11. I imagine skill will be used for healing next turn.
It should be. It shouldn't be used for damage. So you're looking at 11-ish damage, depending upon what's drawn.
Yeah, and he's going to be healing a little bit. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, and he's a tough character, tough dude to play, as we know. So, all right, great stuff. I know there was some pretty good Discord discussion on in here. Does somebody have it up? I can jump into it.
Pulling it up now.
All right. Yeah, I know Eindelus was heavily pushing for just take the Elven Curse, keep the economy for the next cycle, and then buy whatever God doesn't buy the next time around. Which is, I think, a valid argument. Again, the only reason I said go ahead and sacrifice it to grab Grak was to keep your boot on his throat. But I think that keeping the Elven Curse, I guess, is the safer, more conservative way of just, you know, take what's given to you and almost guarantee that you're going to be able to buy something awesome either the next turn or two turns from now, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I like that too, but I would just really quick counter to it. Like, you can also get a really good card now into your shuffle next turn. And like you said, you might even get Grok next turn if you do it right. And then you're starting to use Grok next turn. So that's, it expedites the process, you know? And if he takes,
and Alchemist Mirrors,
if he gets Elven Curse, I mean, yeah, he's going to get some damage, but you're also going to be doing damage to him, you know?
Yeah. The nice thing about Grok is that you get the damage and you have the healing by the guard. You know, that
right.
Since there's no stuns on the board right now on the other opponent's turn. So
Kakak can't really afford to buy Curse next turn. He has to get one of these guards that's left over, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise he's got to get Arcus. Otherwise he's toast.
Let's look at the Discord comments. We'll keep going down. Okay. It looks like Kakar is buying the Elven Curse next turn.
Oh, is he?
But yeah, so if we keep going through the Discord, because I think this is a pretty... What Discord's talk about is completely tangential to everything we've said, and the people commenting here are also very good players, so I think it's important to spotlight what they're talking about.
Totally. Well, yeah, Kakar said he would take the Elven Curse if he was in this position. I don't think he would say he would take it on his turn, per se, if I'm reading that right.
So Samwise pointing out that he accidentally was given credit for this, what would you do? But then he says, I'm going to go for Grok. The draw gives, it's a 7 health champion in the cycle. Rasmus can hide behind Grok, but I'll be looking for a new econ card if you sack Treasure Hunt. Yep. Kakar agreeing with Eindelus. Elven Curse is a monster for 3 gold, and the opponent already has Spark. Especially as an alchemist, you don't want to face 2 discards factioned against you. So I'd get the Elven Curse, and depending on a flip, a Fire Gem. Fire Gem and Treasure Hunt will ensure we'll at least get one of those bombs later, with Rasmus maybe even the same turn. Don't blow off the hunt too early. Nice little throwback to blowing the Sailor.
It's turn 6, by the way, so... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
He makes great points, so all of these are great points. And I actually do think this is a good... What would you do because of it? Because of all these different
perspectives. And,
I think it's because... Zembu
jumping in a little bit later and saying the same thing as Eindelus and Kakar as well. So buying the Elven Curse and saving the Treasure Hunt to potentially top deck one of the champions with Rasmus in a later turn.
Yeah, I mean, that's another valid way to look at it. Alex, you were about to say something. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you nailed it, Coop, whenever you said that there's not a wrong answer here. Yeah. There's only like variations of different answers.
Yeah.
And how you would line this up, which is why it is an excellent what would you do. Yeah.
And I think we'd agree at this point the advantage is to as awesome as, but you know, things could line up for Kaká and there are ways for him to get back in the game. You know,
I think it kind of just depends on your play style and how you want to play. Like I think, you know, if you want to try and end this game in 6 turns, you know, go aggressive and either go Elven Curse or Grok. If you want to steal the health away from him, then buy Arcus and draw it out a little longer, but maybe guarantee, like, just whittle him down that way. So it just kind of depends on what your goal is. So.
Yep. Yeah. I love it. Great. Great. What would you do? Phil Tro, do you have any final comments here before we wrap it up?
Nothing more to add. I think I've spoken a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. Well said. All right. In that case, this is where we'll wrap it up. Thank you to As Awesome As, not only for the submission of this What Would You Do, but for also compiling and creating the screens of the situations that you can find both in the show notes of the podcast itself. There's a link that will take you to a page, or just go straight to the Realms Rising Sparks and Rec episode page, and you can see all the screens there. We'll also, from earlier, we'll put a little screen up of the quest spoiler thing we were talking about. And you can also find the screens, of course, in Discord and vote on them and talk about them there as well if you're interested in that. So thanks to everybody for all your support and submissions on that. Up next, we are going to segue into Mailbag. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
All right, everybody. We've got a quick mailbag this episode. And it's actually it's a question from As Awesome As that might even possibly, it could evolve into like its own segment sometime in the future. It's called, Can We Fix It? Can We Fix It is what he's talking about. And his first topic for the Can We Fix It is the Ranger 4-1 track ability, the draw or scry 4. And does that mean you can discard one? Is that what the 4-1 is? Yeah,
it means that you scry 4 and then you discard 1 and put the other 3 back in whatever order.
Yeah, that's the middle
for one, one gold.
It's the left one. Yeah. Okay.
And it costs one is gold. Middle.
No, it's the middle one. Yeah.
Oh, it is the middle one.
The left one. The left one is 1 gold, 3-2.
Okay.
And my favorite currently.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So he's basically saying it doesn't seem to be very viable or very popular amongst Ranger players. What can we do to fix it? Or if so, how would you change it? All right. And I know you guys have been playing, you know, it seems like a significant amount of Ranger recently. Do you have any ideas on how you could fix the 4-1 Ranger track? Alex, I'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, sure. My only idea that I have, because it does, you can't reduce the gold cost more because it's already at 1 gold. You can't make it discard 2 because then it's just exclusively better than either of the other options. So the only logical thing that you could possibly do is to make it, instead of 4-1, make it 5-1. Scry 5 and then discard 1. That's really your only option.
That's what I was going to say. 5-1. If you do want to buff it, 5-1's the way you go.
5-1. Yeah, so you just let it dig a little deeper.
Just for the record, I don't know that that's still enough to make it better. Just because it doesn't really, maybe it makes it better. I don't know. I guess maybe at that point in time, you could argue that it is arguably as good, or at least a different way of running a 1 gold option over the 3-2 option currently. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I could see that being worth it.
I love it. Yeah, I think that's a good, nothing too strong, nothing too severe, or you know, too crazy. Just add an extra card, let you dig a little bit deeper. And
if nothing else, the change would make people pick it more often because it would be new and exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the only way to tell if it would, how well it would work is to play the crap out of it, basically, and see how it goes. Right. So
I'd play two games as it, then go back to 4-3.
Yeah, so you still play 4-3? We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Ooh, the 4-3, 3-2 talk is coming. I love it.
Ooh, okay, it's about to happen. Get excited.
As Awesome As, thank you for that submission idea, and we'll try to, if we have future ideas for Can We Fix It, or if anybody else does, please send them in and we'll try to work them into future episodes. All right, guys, that's it for Mailbag. Up next, we're going to head into the main focus, which we're tentatively going to title the Hero Helper Data Dump. That's a working title. We'll see how it goes in post-production. Let's segue into that now.
All right, in today's Hero Helper data dump, we're pretty much just going to be looking at production and having a nice little focus on Ranger. So we're now at the point where Ranger buffs have been out long enough and the community started to figure out what's going on. And so we've got a nice little sample to look at. So Human Ranger, we'll start there. It's stabilized down at 51.79% win rate, so looking good. It's much better than the 33% or something that I had before I got buffed. So Ranger buffs definitely working for the humans. Yep. In particular, matchup spreads. It's looked like it's neutralized against Thief. It used to have a shocking matchup. It's still a little bit Thief favored, but it's pretty close to 50-50. Cleric, it's very favored against Cleric. Poor Cleric players. Wizard is favored for Ranger now, so that's just a double whammy. Wizard got nerfed, Ranger got buffed, so the matchup went from being 60-40 one way to 60-40 the other way. Fighter is, I believe, what it's struggling against. I just need to find it. Human Ranger seems to be beating Human Fighter, but it is losing to the Ancestry Fighters. I'm not really sure who's playing Human Fighter these days, so we can take any Barbarian? Human Fighter.
Is Barbarian just looking there, or is that...
Barbarian's not a release to the general public. Yeah, so.
Just the normal queue.
Yeah.
There's
not enough data to talk about a beta matchups.
I would wonder, though, if the Barbarian's a good counter for the Ranger.
Definitely will be, but yeah, there's not enough data to talk about it. So those are our four classes. So Human Ranger's looking all right. It's losing to Ancestry Fighters. It's losing to Ancestry Rangers. Which we'll get to in a sec. And yeah, it's doing all right. It's much better. And the balance patch has definitely helped.
Just a little quick question. Other than Elf Ranger, what other Ancestry Rangers do you have enough data for to quote that?
We'll get there.
Okay. All right.
Right. Next up, Elf Ranger. Elf Ranger is the highest win rate class in the production environment.
Unsurprisingly.
At 65.9%. It has jumped the Ogre Fighter, which was our previous highest. Actually, has it? Yes, it has. It's now the best thing you can play in the main environment that everyone has access to. Wow. It doesn't have any losing matchups. It's only got 50-50s at worst. So it's got 50-50 against Thief and Ancestry Fighter, and it's favored against everything else.
Wow.
So it's doing well.
Dominant. Yeah.
Yep. And we'll get to what makes Elf Ranger strong shortly after we go through the stats. And I think Alex and I both have a lot to talk about here.
A lot.
Looking forward to it.
Next. Half Demon Ranger. It's got a small sample size, but it looks like it's a little bit better than Human. Not enough to really talk about its matchups, but yeah, it's got enough games where we can say it's actually viable. And it's got enough games we can say it's loosely equivalent to Human. We don't actually know quite how good it is yet, though. And the last one is Small Folk Ranger. This definitely has enough games for us to say that it is better than Human. It has a 59% win rate. It's
nice.
It's got half the play rate of the Human Ranger, but it's still got, you know, more play rate than Ogre Fighter, for example. So it's... Yeah, people are playing it and seeing a lot of success with it. It's losing to Elf Ranger. No surprises. And it seems to be, apart from that, it's got a pretty similar matchup spread to Human Ranger and Elf Ranger beyond that. It's just not quite as good as Elf Ranger, but it's still doing better than Human across the rest of the spread.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So Ranger is back.
Yep. Ranger's back. With a vengeance. In particular, Elf. Who knew that the Elf Ancestry would break the reworked parrot?
It happened.
Even after the Elf nerfs.
Which were brutal.
The parrot buff was after the Elf nerfs. So.
No, but the Elf nerfs honestly destroyed Elf. It made Elf borderline useless for most everything. And then they buffed Parrot, and then now all of a sudden, hello, Elf.
Yep. So yeah, if you enjoy passing turn one, the Elf Ranger is for you. But once you get to your second hand, everything you do with this class is ridiculous.
Oh, it's so good.
So yeah, that's our stat dump for the day. Apart from that, nothing else has really changed anywhere else. Alchemist is still tier zero in beta. Everything else is just pretending it's a class compared to it. Wizard bad, cleric bad, thief good. Yep.
Wow, the wizard really
wizard
fell
bad.
Wizard doesn't have ancestry yet. Wizard with ancestry will be.
Sorry,
good.
we're still talking production queue. Sorry, I thought you switched over to beta for like a quarter of a second, and so I thought you were talking about wizard bad in beta queue, and I was like, really? But okay,
Wizard will be good once Ancestries releases. Still got its win rates are decent in the beta queue. Nothing overpowered or anything. But if it's 50% in beta, it's going to be broken when it's released to the rest of it.
Yeah.
And the Ancestries for the Wizard are going to be mainly Small Folk and probably some half demon in there too.
Yeah, it'll be small folk and half demon. Elf will probably be better than human, but not quite as good as the others.
Yeah, as the other two. Yeah, I had some good one or two good games against Alex's small folk wizard recently. That was it's good. Small folk wizard is good. It's fun.
It's actually not my choice anymore. I prefer half demon now. So
I love them both.
Side note, actually. But yeah, no, but the half demon is, you know, anyways.
And you use the I hate to birdwalk a little bit, but use the serene with the half demon, right?
I do. I can't say that everybody does. I do, though.
And with the small folk, do you also use serene with robes?
I use robes and serene and go Super Saiyan somewhere between turn 12 to turn 16. Sometimes as early as turn 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, hey, I don't want to birdwalk.
Dude, we're not talking about wizard today, but just a little side. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk. Where's a good place to start with Ranger? Maybe. What do you think, Phil Joe? Can you talk? What build are you using? First of all, might be a good. What's the best build for Elf Ranger right now? That's being. And I think both of you might have different slants on this. So that
sounds like we do have different slants on
this. I mean, I suppose the answer to it is I haven't tried the 3-2 track, so I'm not going to make comments about which one's better than the other because I haven't tried 3-2. But yeah, I am running the 4-3 track. And I do find that the 4 does come up a lot when I'm playing it. So
yeah,
I do want to keep working on it. Anyway, light crossbow level 5 for obvious reasons. Unending quiver. It occasionally comes up, but yeah, it comes up enough that it's probably better than snake. Cloak at level 9, the extra healing and econ is very important. Level 11 is Compass. So this is the first time I've stopped using Flash Fire Arrow as Ranger.
Ever.
Ever. Because of how good Compass plus Parrot is, which I'm taking at level 13.
Because of how good Parrot is, you take Compass. Yep. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so if the Compass Parrot duo wasn't so strong, I'd still be running Flash Fire Arrow. But Parrot is why we're doing Elf Ranger to begin with, and Compass really pushes it, really synergizes well. Compass is also the most reliable trigger of Parrot in the deck from experience. And then I'm going 4-3 track. I'm going Snapshot because Snapshot is the best. Even with only 2 arrows, Snapshot still is just better than the other variations. Double health upgrade, of course. And that's the build.
Yeah, so it's probably the same as Alex. It's probably only the track that's different, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, literally same build, except 1 gold, 3-2 track. So,
what was the last thing? You get the health upgrades. Right, yeah, okay. So, yeah, it's basically the standard Ranger or the optimal Ranger, except we're taking advantage of the Parrot synergies now with the Compass. It's the Compass instead of the Arrow is kind of the big change.
Yeah.
And that whole Parrot synergy is what's running the show, isn't it? It's the engine that's putting the Elf Ranger into the upper stratospheres.
Yeah. So the way we'll say turn 3, turn 4. We'll assume the Parrot's in hand, and we'll just say, you know, we've got Elven Wisdom, we've got a Parrot in hand, and we've got a Compass floating around somewhere. The way a typical turn 3 or 4 and pretty much every turn after the game will look like, if Parrot is in your hand, the first thing if you've got Elven Wisdom, you'll play Elven Wisdom. If you don't have Elven Wisdom, whoop-de-doo. You'll get to 2 gold, you'll discard Parrot. And from there, you'll try to find ways in which you can use Unending Quiver, Compass, and Track to guaranteed hit Parrot. So you'll push through your bows and arrows until you get down to 4 or 5 cards in your deck or discard. You'll play your Compass. Compass will discard Parrot. You draw your next card. At this point, you probably got some Econ. You buy a card. You put it in your discard pile. Now that you've got you had 5 cards earlier, you drew 1 to your hand, you put Parrot to discard, you've got 4 cards, you've got 4 in your discard. Now we'll buy a card, back to 5 total between deck and discard. will draw another card from like a quiver or an arrow lying around. I'm going to use my 4-3 track, parrot the card that I just bought, and two random cards are now in my deck. I'm going to get rid of the parrot, get that card that I just bought to my hand, play it. You know, if it's a sacrifice card, yeet some other cards out of my deck, and, you know, rinse and repeat. We're triggering parrot consistently 2 or 3 times a turn. We're pretty much always triggering it once. But yeah, sometimes you'll get 4, and, you know, that is a bit happy magical Christmas land. But yeah, it's pretty much usually 2 or 3. And because you're emptying out your deck, your track can discard parrot and then basically put cards that you bought that turn into your hand. Because
and
of how
what
far
kind
you can
of cards,
down.
Generally speaking, and I know it's all situational, but what kind of cards are you targeting in the market?
High value cards and sacrifice. Whether it's damage cards like Elven Curse or sacrifice cards like Rot or just big booty champs or high power actions. Like it's, you know, the same normal stuff you'd buy as Ranger. Ranger wants a mean slim deck. And when you have Parrot, you can, you know, cycle through that main slim deck even quicker. So it's just a lot of actions, it's a lot of sequencing. I'm pretty much only ever tracking when I know that I'll hit parrot, unless my hand is just, you know, I mean, tracking always fixes a bad hand. So, but when you are in a good spot, parrot, you can use track to trigger parrot and get a card into your hand. So tracking becomes a draw on top of the cycle with
crazy.
Parrot,
yeah,
which is what pushes it over the edge. And the reason I do like the 4-3 track is because I find that the extra card of digging comes up enough that I can't see myself wanting to convert to 3-2, mainly because of the use case that I've outlined now of buying a card. Your deck is now small enough that a 4-3 track will guaranteed hit the card and the parrot in your discard pile. And you can play that card the turn you buy it. And this happens on turn 3, turn 5, you know, constantly. There's a lot of times where a 3-2 track wouldn't have done what I wanted it to do.
All right, well, that's a good segue to throw it over to Alex here, because he's, I'm sure, seeing success with the 3-2, it sounds like. So give us your spiel on the 3-2, Alex.
So number one argument for the 3-2 is that it makes your first hand not dead. It makes it a setup hand, because statistically speaking, most of the time, you will actually get a single gold in your first hand. Assuming you're going first, you'll have at least one gold. I mean, yes, you can get the bow, the single bow, like the 2-damage bow, not the crossbow, or a single arrow. It does happen. But more often than not, you will get a single gold as your one card in your opening hand. And then that opens up your track, so that it's not a completely dead pass your first hand. It means you can set up your turn 2 for something much bigger, or I guess your turn 3, technically, much bigger. So that is my number one argument for the 1-gold 3-2 track over that. The second argument is that it does give you one more gold every single turn to be able to buy something. Now, that doesn't always lend to greater things. It just means that there is potential for bigger plays. So I would argue that in longer games, the 4-3 track is much more consistent. I don't even think there's any argument for that. I think it's a way more consistent thing. I think that the current meta is pushing towards faster games. Almost all of my games outside of like Lift Thief and Cleric games, most everything else is over by like turn 16, maybe turn 20 at the latest. My argument is that the 3-2 track gives you a much greater opportunity to end the game somewhere between turns 12 and 14 than the 4-3 track does.
Interesting. Yeah. So it kind of the handicap start or the acceleration.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, it has the opportunity. I don't think the 4-3 track ever truly has a dead hand after turn 1. It's a guaranteed dead hand turn 1. But I do think that because of that extra gold, it takes slightly longer to set up. Okay. Outside of like, I mean, you're going to have your spike games, but whereas the 3-2 track, you're going to have dead hands if the game goes long enough. but the game rarely goes long enough to consistently see those dead hands, if that makes sense.
Just a quick question, Alex. Do you just want to pull up your hero helper to see what your first turn, second turn differential is?
Yeah,
so
I'd love to.
I've got a 1% higher win rate going second at the moment. So it's 76 going first, 77 going second.
I'm going to need a second for that.
And I'd also like to point... Yeah, and, you know, I think about 20, somewhere between 10 and 20 of these games were before the wizard, the elf got buffed, and I had like a 60 to 65% win rate, so it's really spiked up.
So it's probably higher than your current...
Yeah, I know it's above 80% when I'm piloting it. I don't know the exact number, though. I could go check it now. It'd be a bit of manual effort, though, just going through here a whole bit long.
Well, all of this has piqued my interest. I'm going to have to jump into the prod queue with my elf ranger now and see what's up.
All right.
It does sound fun. And again, it's one of those things where it's enjoy it while it lasts, because it's probably not going to last.
I don't think it's going to get nerfed.
I don't think it will get nerfed. I think it actually made... So I think the reason that I haven't tried Spyglass at all, even though it's been changed, is because I think that the parrot just made me so excited to play it that I didn't want to play Spyglass anymore. And I didn't want to play Flashfire because it was the old thing. And the Parrot Compass combo was so good, why try the other thing? I just haven't gotten there yet. I'm going to eventually try it. I just haven't gotten there. Yeah. So I don't know that it's bad that it needs to be nerfed, because the other one could be just as good. I just haven't played it. So
the reason I don't think it should be nerfed is because the only reason we're seeing these outliers is because this is an Ancestry class that's released before all the classes have Ancestry. If... We weren't asking for Ogre Fighter to be nerfed when it had 65% win rate before other Ancestries popped in. I think Elf Ranger hits that same sweet spot where its win rate's high just because it's not playing against the full competition yet. I think once we get Thief and Wizard, their Ancestries, into the main environment, maybe we can have another conversation then. But I don't think Elf Ranger is going to be particularly egregious when it's paired up against Small Folk Wizards and Small Folk Thieves. I think it's just going to be... It's going to be good, but it's not going to be the best thing. It's going to be up there, but it's not going to be broken.
I guess it's whatever. With my data in particular, I feel like my Elf Ranger is equally as good in the beta queue as it is in the normal queue. And maybe that's flawed logic, but that's how I feel, at least when I'm playing it. And to answer your question about going... First versus second. There we go.
Quickly scrolling through Hero Helper.
I'm trying to track through all this. I win more going first than I win going second.
Yeah. What's the differential?
Substantial, 11.5%.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it's actually
that going first really it allows you to set up for a really big turn three, which sounds stupid, but you know sometimes the snapshot gives you that big buy. Sometimes you don't even need snapshot for that big buy because of that first turn setup. So
all right, here's a funny stat I've got. I have a 23% differential, better going second in the Ranger mirror.
Interesting.
So I'm above 90% going second, and I'm 69% going first.
Wow. I am...
Sample sizes are small enough to take it with a grain of salt, but 60... it's pretty funny.
Oh, funny. I am also better going second in the Ranger mirror, but there's a 3% difference as opposed to
that. So basically the same, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sample size is small enough that we can take that with a grain of salt, but
right, yeah.
It's kind of funny to look at.
I love it. And Coop, just a quick strat question. I'm sure it's the answer, but you're using your snapshot to reach for big buys early. That's typically how you're using it, right?
Yeah. I'm finding it harder to set up snapshots than with a human, because when you're playing Elf Ranger, you see your entire deck basically every turn.
Yeah.
So the snapshots, they're harder to... Because when you're playing human, you deliberately set up a snapshot turn. Like, when you're on turn one or turn two, you track, you put your arrows in your discard pile, and next turn you just go. When you're playing Elf Ranger, your deck just lets you go without having to snapshot.
So it's
like,
just
you pretty much have... You have the same amount of econ and draw you'd get out of a snapshot turn without snapshotting.
I would argue that way more often than not, you end up using the... you get one arrow if you're lucky, but I end up using snapshot literally just for the draw. Maybe for the stun more than the draw as the ranger.
Yeah, I'm still using it for the draw more than the stun, which is why I don't think using the other snapshots... Like, I don't think I've ever used snapshot when there's been two champions on the board.
Ever. No, so, like, but you win before you get two champions on the board most of the time. So,
yeah, and there's you know, and there's enough times where you get 2 arrows out of snapshot. Usually, I'm only getting one, but I'm getting 2 arrows more than I'm stunning in a position to stun more than one champion.
Right, exactly.
That's why.
I think one out of every like 30 games, you're like, damn, long shot would be really good right now.
I've played 30 games and I've had more than 30 games. I've had 0 games where I've thought, damn, long shot would be good right now. So.
Good stuff. All right. I think that's pretty good discussion on the Ranger. Before we wrap up this section here,
can I say this? Yeah. Can I do one more thing from the other side? Because I have not played the old school way of Flash Fire Arrow and Spyglass, but I've played against it a couple of times. Every time I play against it, and I granted, I think this some of this is matchup because I've been playing healing classes. Even sometimes, like even if it's half demon wizard, it still heals a little bit. I get scared because it hits really hard. Like, I mean, really hard, really quickly. But I always seem to stabilize against it. And I don't know if that is the class I'm playing, if it is the pilot. I'm not entirely sure. But I do think that there is an argument for that particular build. I just haven't played it enough to be able to comment on it other than as the opponent. So.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, one more thing we alluded to earlier. If you have the parrot in your hand, and your opponent does not have exactly Serpentine Staff in their deck, if you cannot discard parrot, press end turn. Do your damage, press end turn. Do not put parrot into play. If you put parrot into play, you, especially if you're playing elf, your entire deck just... It's not bad. Like, it's still good. It's just substantially worse.
And as an opponent, if... your dear if your dear enemy manages to play the parrot, do not stun it. As a matter of fact, unless you absolutely desperately need that one gold for whatever reason, do not play Serpentine Staff to automatically stun it. It's not worth it.
Good advice.
The keep one that I'd make an exception only. Is what's the name of the dragon? I'm forgetting. Valius. Valius, you probably still pop, just because it is so much damage when you activate him. Valius is the exception to the rule.
It's also because it hits face.
Stunning a parrot. Yeah, because it hits face. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Valius didn't hit face, you wouldn't use it. But Valius hits face, so just let them have that draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff on that. Any other meta stuff you want to talk about really quick? Like I said, I haven't been playing that much. Just a little... monk and even less barbarian. The monk is still fun to me. I only play a little bit in the beta and I always get matched up against the big dogs, and I still do, you know, reasonably well with it. I still love the monk. Filter, are you playing any monk still?
No, I'm too scared to match into 10 good alchemists in a row and lose my diamond stars.
Oh my God. okay, so on that note, I actually looked at my stats just inadvertently before we came on the podcast. I have 10 games with my alchemist against monk. I have 10 wins with my alchemist against monk. So
I'm 50-50 in the matchup. I think that says something.
So
I've
got a 50% win rate in the matchup, and that is my worst matchup.
And that's not to say that's not to say the monk is bad. Monk is in a really good place right now. It's just that it sounds weird. It's too slow. And I think that's because, and this is, again, we're not talking about monk supposedly, but we are now. I think that the popular build with Monk is to play slow. It's to grab your cards, get the econ. You've got all the slow, because whenever I was playing Monk to start, I was playing the aggro Monk because I thought it was really cool, and then they nerfed the crap out of it, and so I haven't played it since. But I actually think that the aggro Monk, if people actually wanted to play it, might have a shot in hell right now because of Alchemist. I think you could actually beat Alchemist a little more consistently, considering your percent chance against a good Alchemist is near zero. It's almost so as bad as Wizard versus Cleric.
I can beat him with Barbarian sometime. Alchemist, if I get.
I actually think Barbarian and Fighter is probably two of your better matchups against Alchemist right now. And you can look at the data and tell us that.
It almost certainly is. I'm not even going to look at the data. I'm confident in it.
But you have to beat Alchemist before like turn 12 or you lose. Like, that's just kind of how it works.
Yeah. You got to. Every time I've beaten Alchemist's Monk, I've used ability to grab, you know, like there hasn't been a premium six in the opening market. If Alchemist gets a premium six in opening market, you may as well just concede on the spot.
It's oh my God, it's so bad.
Yeah. So it's grabbing high efficient damage cards, and then you just play Monk and cycle through them. So every time that I beat an Alchemist with Monk, that's what's happened.
And this is my argument.
And keep cycling.
And this is my argument for where you need a healthy aggro class. Because they're... And it's not that there's not. I actually think Ogre Fighter is a healthy aggro class, but there's not enough people playing it to keep people from playing Alchemist in the slightly greedy way that we're playing it.
I still think that Alchemist is currently just so strong that even the greedy ways still have game into aggro. They should be just a little bit worse. And I think that's just because they're early. They can just accelerate into really powerful plays a bit too early. Is kind of what their problem is. Just a little bit too.
The spectacle.
They get off the ground a little bit too quickly.
Do you think they need to change the one gold back to a dagger? Is that literally enough to balance it back out?
It'd be good to
start. Yeah, they gave them a ruby randomly. Alchemist didn't release with a ruby.
Did it get replaced? Did the dagger get replaced with a ruby?
No, they changed the gold into a ruby.
And then
they did that when they buffed Barbarian. They gave Alchemist a ruby.
Ah, okay.
Back when Alchemist was good at high levels, because Alchemist is terrible at level 3. Like,
that's
what they do sometimes. They put stuff in there to balance out level 3. And
it's weird. Because Alchemist is terrible at level 3, you can't change the base deck. You have to change the upgrades. I think Spectacles is a good place to start, and I think maybe look at the ability.
What do you do? Turn it to 35? Enough to turn it off a little earlier?
No, I think you kind of
can change it to 35 or 40.
Ooh, okay. 30 to 40 is a lot.
I'm spitballing here.
I think 35 is
probably good.
I like smaller changes. I would say let's start with 35 and then see what happens and then see how, because it will drop. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of how much.
Yeah.
Is it 1% or is it like 5%? You know? Yeah. So
it'd be a shame to lose the functionality of the spectacles, you know.
And goes without saying that the treasures we've seen for level 16 and 18 on Alchemist are absurdly
powered,
so they all need to be nerfed.
There's a reason they needed to be tested. Now we'll see if Wise Wizard Games comes to their senses and changes some things, but dear Lord, those were broken. Yeah, it was tons of fun. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah. Alchemist is really fun to play. It's just a bit too good.
It was a lot of fun for the first, like, 10 games, and it was like, okay, this isn't even a challenge anymore. I'm ending the game by, like, turn 7 consistently. So.
Yep. All right, well,
I also want to address the allegations of Big Shuffle while we're here.
Big Shuffle.
Big Shuffle. You know, there's a conspiracy in WWG. If you're not a Discord user, your firebombs will always be bottom decked. As a Discord user, I would like to come out on the record and say I too bottom deck firebombs.
Domination. I have a meme that addresses this specifically. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have six cards in deck, and one of them is domination, what are the odds of bottom decking domination? 100%.
100%.
I've lost two games today by bottom decking lethal. Like, it happens. Just whatever.
Yeah.
Such is the nature of randomness.
Yeah. And humans, but I've also like humans won games where I top decked the one card out of eight in order to give me lethal, and had zero. I had zero reason to win that game. But then you ended up winning anyways. So
yeah, and it's important to note that humans are notoriously terrible at figuring out what the difference between a random event is and something that, well, perceiving random is, we're very bad at it. If I were to flip five coins in a row and flip heads five times, that is as random as flipping a coin that goes three heads or two tails, or heads, tails, heads, tails, heads. They're all as random as each other, but humans don't recognize that. People will look at five heads in a row and go, oh, that coin's rigged to flip heads. It's like, no, it's not. It just happens.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah, flip the coin 30 more times and it'll balance out. Well, technically like 70 more times, but still, yeah.
Even then, you're going to have some random weird streaks.
But there will be some variance. You know, I guess like, flip it 9,980, like 90 more times and it'll balance out. But
I think there was an we're waffling a bit now, but I think that was an experiment. Some person was in prison or something and, you know, like a statistician, and just kept flipping a coin and made a note of it. And, you know, eventually, like, it's, you know, by the time you flipped a coin 1,000 times, it is 50-50, you know.
Oh, I thought somebody actually did that and determined that because of the weight of the side of the coin, technically there's like a 0.02%.
If it's a quarter, I think if it's a quarter, it's a quarter.
Yeah. Where because of the weight of it, it's like, it's some stupidly low percentage, but it is actually consistently like 0.0%, 0.02% higher to land on heads than it is tails or something.
There's another research too. This is getting worse and worse, but there's other research that says when you actually flip it, whatever side is facing up has a greater chance of landing down. And that was either, I think they did it for a quarter or a US 50 cent piece. And they said it was significantly higher depending on, like, when a human flips it face up, it's better. It
has the nature of like the average human hand strength or something like that.
Okay. I don't know all the numbers on it, but look it up if you're interested in it. Anyway, great quarter flip, coin flipping stats here to wrap up the Hero Helper data dump. Great stuff as always. Thanks, Coop, for compiling and sharing all that as always. We will be looking, of course, at more stuff in the future as different things come and go through the meta. But for now, guys, let's wrap it up and head into kind of a short but sweet community roundup. All right, guys, here we are. We're getting towards the end. We're decreasing our altitude and circling into to a holding pattern here. But first, let's go over a little community roundup. I don't have too much to talk about, but I'll start out with an update on Grand Joust, which has been going since November. Here we are in March. It's getting close to the end. We are now in the semifinals, where we have Kakaz Ranger versus Filtrophobes Monk. Apparently, this still has not started yet. I think people have gotten busy, but hopefully CCAA and Filtro can get that started soon. I know it's not of Filtrophobes' fault. He sent challenges and Kakaz busy, but looking forward to see how that one goes. That should be a good matchup. In the other end of the semifinals, we have Eindeloos versus Noodletube in an Alchemist Mirror, which is going to be something crazy as well. I think they've started, but I'm not sure. These are best of five matchups, and we will see how they turn out. But congrats to everybody made it to the semifinals, including your own Filtro. What else do I got? I've also got King of the Castle, which... due to my own busy schedule, has been slow to update, but it has been updated recently. We have King Samwise in Castle A facing off against Glitterfart right now. And in Castle B, our own The Cat's Meow sits atop the throne against a challenger, Double Dubs, also of Sparks and Rec fame. That should be a good matchup. And we have about seven or eight people in the queue right now. If you're interested, it's always open. It's a good place to jump in for an event if you're looking for a place to check, test out the waters against some really good players and play in a really fun format. Hail to the Kings, or Kings of the Castle, as we sometimes refer to it. That's about it for me. I know Fight Club is currently ongoing right now. Noodle noted that they're working on Tavern Brawl, or they're thinking about what they're going to do. So that's probably coming up at some point in the next few months, will be my guess, but who knows about that. Either of you guys have any community roundup things to talk about?
Yeah, I just might quickly shout out what's happening in Fight Club. So we are currently in the finals. Arcanel has made it to the grand final, is awaiting his opponent, defeated Shark Frog in one of the semis. And on the other side of the bracket in the semifinal, we've got Stralio and Eindelus. And I think they're just starting now. I don't quite know how their game's going, but that's where that's at. Arcanel obviously won the last Fight Club, so backing it up nice and strong.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's about it. Of course,
We also had Echoes of Valor finish up. So when we last had the podcast, it was announced there was a three-way tie between myself, Kakar, and Stralio, and that because this was the first season, we'd play a nice little round robin between each other to decide, you know, who came first. And the result of that is that all three series were 3-0s, funnily enough. And Kakar takes out the title for Echoes of Valor with his Alchemist. And I come second with my Monk, and Stralio comes third with their Barbarian. Yeah.
And remember, Filcho, Eindelus actually gave the results to that in the previous episode. Maybe you probably just didn't listen to it, but he did indeed.
So he gave us the top three, but we hadn't played our round robin before.
I thought it was finished yet. Okay, my bad. So good. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. Yep. I thought for some reason it was finished. That was a big one. And the fun part is that that was just basically the placement tournament for the actual league, which is the whole thing that he set up, which is about to start soon. And the different groups have been, I don't think he's quite decided on yet. I could be wrong, but I think the deadline to get your heroes in was a few days ago. So hopefully he's probably on that. And that'll be a lot of fun to see.
It was. Yeah.
How the league shakes out. So, and thanks to Eindelus again for doing that.
Yeah. I ended up changing out two of my three characters. So, you know,
me too. I booted my, small folk wizard and small folk thief.
Same. They did not perform nearly as well as I had hoped. So,
yeah.
I have booted my small folk wizard, but I've kept my elf wizard because my elf wizard's my pet project. So,
fair enough.
I think that's part of the point of Echoes of Valor, is to play the things that you enjoy and the things that you have fun with. Because if you're going to have to play them season in and season out, they'll have to last through balance changes.
Yeah, I actually think I like that. I've played a few Elf Wizard games, and it's a lot of fun to play. Inconsistent sometimes, just because you get destroyed by aggro, but a lot of fun to play.
That's kind of Wizard in a nutshell, though, right, at this point. Okay, Alex, do you have any community roundup stuff, or are we good to go here?
Nah, it's good to be king again. That's all I got.
It's good. You are in the king seat, and I hope Double Dubs will bring it against you. But we'll see how that goes on.
Let's
wrap this up and head. He does. That's why he's Double Dubs. All right, guys, let's head into the finale, the big cheese at the end of the show. Tap it or scrap it. Here we are. When you hear that melancholy music, you know our time together is approaching an end. Thanks to you guys for joining us. Great pod as always. Great discussion. It's great to see that even though I haven't been able to play too much recently, you guys have been, and you have a lot of interesting insight to share. Thanks so much for doing that. Before we wrap it up, though, let's do our taps and scraps. Anybody want to go first here? You got some taps and scraps ready?
I'm going to tap the Elf Ranger. It is a lot of fun. I know we've been talking about it, but seriously, it is so much fun. I'm having a blast, and that's why it is my tap. And my scrap is people not understanding statistics making me angry. It is a pet peeve of mine when people are bad at math and try to claim that they're good at math and that, you know, they're not the problem. You know, whether it's confirmation bias or whatever, gambler's fallacy, people who make decisions bad on math and try to justify it, saying that, no, it's fine. It's like, it winds me up a lot. And so that's my scrap. People who don't understand math but think they do.
Well said. Nice taps, nice scraps. Alex, let's toss it over to you. What are you scrapping? What are you tapping this week?
My tap is this community, because consistently throughout the entirety, at least as long as I've been a part of it, which has been pretty close to day one. I'm not going to say day one, but within the first few months of Realms Rising being a popular thing, the community's been awesome. And the, you know, there are going to be sour people who come in and want to complain about their thing or are sour or whatever. They don't last long. The community as a whole consistently is awesome. And we do a great job of welcoming people in and loving on them and helping everybody get better. I think there's, I would argue, and I will die on this hill, that the best players in HR are consistently Realms Rising Discord attendees. So, and active in the community. It's just fun to watch the community bond together. And as soon as somebody comes in and tries to, I don't know, argue about statistics, you have like 10, 15 people that step up and they're like, nah, just, you know, join the mentor mentee like community group and you'll be all right. So like, you just got to show up and try a little bit harder, you know? But, and then, scraps. I don't know that I got anything, man. Life is good. Oh, I got another tap. Minnesota Vikings look like they're putting together a pretty good team for next year. You know, completely different thing altogether. But I'm very excited for draft season and signings and trades and that kind of stuff. It's been a really cool thing, not just for the Vikings, but for the NFL. It's been a lot of fun this year. So I have no scraps.
Nice.
Life is good.
Yeah, you're getting your double tap and you're getting geeked up for football season. Nice. Good. What am I scrapping? Yeah. What am I tapping this week? Oh, all right. So one scrap for me. I don't know if you guys know this, but the creator of the manga creator for Dragon Ball, Toriyama Akira, passed away recently, pretty young. He was like 68 or something. And he was a big influence on his art style. When I was young, I actually had a Japanese neighbor. One of the reasons I got first interested in Japan, because there was a family that lived in my neighborhood, and this young, it was in elementary school, and he would bring over his comic books. Then they were Dragon Ball comic books, and that was like one of my first experiences with Japanese culture. And it was really sad to see that he passed away recently. So that's my scrap. It's always sad to see someone that affected your childhood go away. But the tap is, I guess, one of the cool things on like social media and other stuff that I've seen are all the artists and all the people who show their own artwork and show how they were affected by someone like that in their lifetime. So it's kind of cool it's sad to see someone go, but when you see the effect that they had on so many people all over the world, that's a pretty cool thing. So that's kind of my scrap it and tap it for this week. Kind of sad, but also bittersweet and positive as well. All right, I will start out the farewells here. Again, thanks everybody for coming. It's always great to do the podcast. I've been so busy lately. I haven't been able to play too much, but still trying to keep it rolling. Just a quick heads up, coming into like April and May, my work's going to get busy, so the production schedule might slow down a bit. I'm foreseeing that, but don't worry. We'll be back once I get through the tough work schedule. And we'll try to get some stuff going. We'll see what happens, but we will get one more episode out definitely the end of this month before the busy period happens. So stick around. We'll be here. Thanks, Alex, Cooper, you guys are the best. Your play style is only matched by your commitment to the community and your the way you share your insight with everybody and help people become better players. So thanks for being aboard, guys, the SS Sparks and Rec. That's it for me. Coop, I'll fling it to you next. Why don't you say your farewells, and then Alex, you can take us home.
Yeah. Good time as always. Thanks everyone for listening. If you do want to help us out and particularly support Hero Helper, subscribe to the Patreon. All of the costs go just to monitor or to keep this podcast going. Nothing comes back into our pocket, and we send everything back into the community if there is any profit along the way. Yeah. And what did we learn today? We learned that Elf Ranger is fun. Ancestries will shake up production, and the Jig was a weeaboo before it was cool.
Well said. I sit down. Alex, go for it.
Always a pleasure to be on the podcast. Even more of a pleasure to hang out with the two of you guys. Love this game. Had a lot of fun. Glad I had an opportunity over the last weekend to re-engage, because there have been some really fun things. Elf Ranger, I've refound my love for Half-Demon Wizard, and Alchemist is still stupid. So, you know, but I'm going to enjoy that as long as I possibly can before I either run out of time or because it gets nerfed. So, other than that, thank you for this community. Y'all are all awesome. Keep listening, and I'll see you in the realms.
I guess someone's just got to drop stay fresh cheese bags. Catch you next time.
You made it to the end of the show. Congratulations. You're a nerd. Tune into the next episode of Sparks and Recreation for more on community events, meta-analysis, and everything Hero Realms.